يا هلا فويس، الصوت العربي في أمريكا.
He is the one, the only, the Baba joining us.
Hello voice. When a recovering Islamophobe talks.
This is to pay a compliment, so I've got to convert to Islam.
That's
I've
right.
got to go with a satchel of money apparently to Ramallah Jews.
Absolutely.
Bob and the friends.
Now all of a sudden you have Americans and you have Europeans coming in and moving in to Israel on what's called the right of return, where they're given a free right of return. They didn't grow up there. They didn't live there. They didn't live there 20 years ago. Now they live there.
Bob,
and they moved in there from Europe. And they're given the right of return. What happened to the Palestinians that lived there?
Yalla, Bob. Enzel al-Dabki.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, for another episode of Bob and Friends, where this recovering Islamophobe sits in for his weekly therapy. Today we're looking at having on Nathan Lean, who's going to be coming in next week and speaking at DePaul for a conference on Islamophobia. And actually he's looking at the softer side of liberal Islamophobia and the issues of that. So he'll be coming on talking to us about that. A little bit later we're going to have Lisa Kozlowski from Jewish Voices for Peace and my friend Yasmina with My Jihad, who is going to be coming on. And actually we have been asked to be on a panel this week, and so it's pretty exciting. It's a panel on Islamophobia. This is clearly a case where that someone on the panel, me, will be the student, because there's so much I still have yet to learn. As I'm discovering, certainly I don't have all the answers, and that's why I come here, to talk and get some issues out there that we don't hear typically in any other venue, that's out there. We're not actually sitting down and working at figuring out how we can build bridges between communities. You don't hear people doing that, and we're doing that here at Yahala Voice. It is unique. It's an approach. It's something that needs to be done. Because as we break down these walls, as we break down these barriers between each other, the fear starts to dissipate and we realize we have so much in common and we work together to accomplish things and do things. And that's the way it's got to be. I mean, if you just take a look at my week this week, today I'm here at the show. Tomorrow I'll be or tonight after this I'm going to Willow Creek Community Church. I'm going to try to make it up there. Willow Creek Evangelical Church, a large mega church up in Barrington, South Barrington, I believe. And they're having a conference on how to reach out to their Muslim neighbor. And I'm really intrigued. There've been many wonderful things going on at Willow Creek. And this is one of them. They are making a conscious effort to reach out to the Islamic community. And it's again, something that really needs to happen. So to see a mega church like this working on building bridges is really exciting for me anyway. And like I said, I went back to Willow Creek when it was at Willow Creek Theater. So I've got a long history with that. Then tomorrow, I'll be attending an AmVote, where they're looking at trying to get out the American Arab vote. And there's a conference on that. So I'll be attending that tomorrow. My buddy Rush is going to be emceeing that event, over in Oak Brook. So I'll be there on Friday night. Then I'll be at the Naperville Islamic Center. There, Ahmed Rehab is coming in, and speaking, and he's going to be in an event there. So I'm going to be there at 8:00 PM. Then on Saturday, we have this conference that we were talking about. The conference is, the Islamophobia conference. That's going to be at the Al-Nada Center in Worth. We'll be discussing that and that panel is going to be very interesting. Again, I'm going to be sitting on a panel. The recovering Islamophobe is going to be up there talking about what we can do. And we'll be sharing that a little bit later. Then on Sunday, we've got the AADC. The Arab American Democratic Club is having their brunch with the candidates in Belvedere, AADCIL.com for that. And then on Tuesday, February 2nd, we are going to have Nathan Lean, who is working with the Georgetown Initiative, the Bridge Initiative in Georgetown. And if I'm not mistaken, Nathan, you're on the line with us now. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. Bentley, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Now, how's the North Carolina boys surviving the snowstorm? That's what I want to hear.
I tell you what, it was a mess. But 2 feet of snow in D.C., I think, is what you guys call spring in Chicago, right?
You know what? It's actually reversed this year because there is barely anything covering the ground here at all. So had you been able to get out of there, you would have come up to like nothing. And it was so funny because I was like, yeah, you were supposed to do the conference last Monday. But you couldn't get out of there over the weekend.
Right.
And your statement to me beforehand was, look, I'm a North Carolina boy. If the creek don't rise, I'll be there. Well, apparently
the
creek rose.
Yeah, it sure did.
That's wild. But you're going to be here next Tuesday at DePaul University, and you're going to be giving that talk is the Islamophobia and the Soft Prejudice of Liberalism. What a title.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, share with me. You're looking at Islamophobia with it. I mean, usually for me, I see Islamophobia as being a political tool, and I know you've written about this in your book.
Yeah.
Is a political tool of the right. But what you're looking at is Islamophobia over on the liberal side. I'm really intrigued to learn about this.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're right. It's kind of an effort for me to, or an attempt to flip the script a little bit and to look at Islamophobia, exactly as you say, on the left side of the political spectrum. And just to give our listeners some details about the talk, it's, as you mentioned, Tuesday, February the 2nd from 6 to 8, and it's actually going to be at the DePaul Art Museum, on West Fullerton Avenue. But all of the details, of course, will be online. But really what I want to do is I want to encourage us to think about Islamophobia as a broader phenomenon that spans the political spectrum and look at the ways in which people on the left and advocates of Western liberalism in general have really taken things like free speech, taken things like the alleged threat of Islamism, and used them as weapons in a way to target the Muslim community and advance this presumption that unless you subscribe to a particular set of beliefs that the United States and countries in Europe hold true, then you are not really part of or shouldn't be viewed as an equal part of this society. And that's problematic for a lot of different reasons, which I'll get into more in the talk. But I wanted to do something a little bit new. And I wanted to do something that kind of pushed the boundaries and pushed the envelope in terms of how we usually think about this form of prejudice.
Well, and speaking of that, pushing boundaries, you put out a New Republic article today that I think probably pushed some buttons out there.
Yeah, it did. So this piece is something that I've been working on since June, actually. It's been something that's occupied a large chunk of space in my mind. But it looked at Majid Nawaz, who, as listeners may or may not know, is an ex-Islamist, an ex-fundamentalist, an ex-radical, as he describes himself, and was formerly a member of the Islamist group Hizb ut-Tahrir, which was a peaceful group, but that wanted to bring about, an Islamic global caliphate and held events all over the world and campaigned and so on and so forth to do that. But he tells this story of experiencing this sort of Damascene conversion in prison, which led him now to his current path, which is one of Western liberalism. He is an advocate of secularism. He says that he champions dialogue and peace and understanding, and all of these things sound very good, and a lot of people take him seriously. And indeed, some of what he says is actually good. But what I did in this piece was actually look at the backstory of that conversion a little bit and got into touch with people who knew him during that time, including two members of his family, his elder brother and his cousin, his cellmate who was with him in prison for 4 years, Ian Nisbet, as well as a few other close friends and acquaintances that he had. And they all basically said, absolutely not, this story is a bunch of BS. We know him well, and Majid is an opportunist. He saw an opportunity to make a bunch of money, and he jumped at it. And so that's basically kind of the crux of the story.
And that's exactly the way I'd surmise it. And with this college roommate saying almost exactly that, you know, calling him out essentially as an opportunistic who's jumped on this anti-extremism gravy train and doing it quite successfully. From the numbers you're throwing out there, yeah, he's pulling down some major coin and then pulling it in from different, I mean, both conservative outlets as well as the liberal outlets, as he's playing the role of being a liberal, essentially, a what shall I call him, a born-again liberal?
You know, and
being on that side. And so he's got this very – this powerful voice that kind of comes in like this reformed, Islamist, if you will. And so people are eager to throw money at him, but he's doing it essentially for his own benefit. And I think there's a whole cottage industry of people that are doing that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just like him. But just to give you a quick idea of the numbers, I mean, we're talking about an organization that he founded here receiving close to $4 million over the course of 3 years from the British government. And last year, in the year 2015, he drew a base salary of more than $140,000. That's not counting, of course, you know, money that he receives for speaking fees and all sorts of other things. So he's really doing quite well. This is very unlike his days in the Egyptian prison when, you know, he would get a piece of bread and water and a little cheesy salt. Or salty cheese blob to eat, as he describes it in his book. I mean, he's, you know, dining out with the who's who of Washington and London, and really, I think has managed to kind of work himself into two circles, as you described, this kind of liberal camp and also the conservative camp. I mean, he is mollycoddled by people like Sam Harris, who's advocated racial profiling. And said that Islam is the motherlode of bad ideas. Ayan Hirsi Ali, who said that Islam is a nihilistic death cult that should be defeated militarily. But then has also worked his way into circles that include Washington policymakers. You know, he's David Cameron's advisor on extremism in the UK, and has drafted various speeches that the Prime Minister has given. And so he's very influential because he toes this line of Islamism, Islamism, Islamism is the threat. Oh, it's not about Islam, it's about Islamism. But unable to see really the way that that he advances stereotypical understandings of Islam by continuing to zero in on the Muslim community, and that is ultimately why I think so many people in the Muslim community reject his views and feel so compelled to call him out.
Now, does he still claim, and I didn't see this, if it is, now does he claim to be a practicing Muslim within the community, or is he now one of these kind of like, almost like Sam Harris, you know, kind of going over into the atheism or agnostic side of things?
Well, almost like Sam Harris. He claims that he is not a devout Muslim. In fact, he says that explicitly, and I think anybody that looks at his actions would acknowledge that. I mean, this is a guy who claims to be a great, you know, feminist and advocate of women's rights, yet was caught getting handsy with a stripper at a strip club in London a few years ago. So, you know, there's that. But this is a guy that likes to go out and have drinks with friends, go to the strip club, you know, kind of lead the liberal, secular, do whatever the heck I want to do kind of life. And that also, I think, puts him at odds with many practicing Muslims. But whether he's a practicing Muslim or a non-practicing Muslim, that doesn't really matter, because I think so many people in the Muslim community really take issue not with his personal religious beliefs as much as they do with the fact that he advocates policies that affect the Muslim community that are quite draconian. I mean, sending lists, secret lists, to the British terrorism and security chief of Muslim groups in the UK that are supposedly extremist in their ideology and that the government should be wary of. I mean, this is a guy who developed a radicalization keywords list that was used in British schools so that if school children using a state computer were to search particular words, if any number of those words came up in their search, that child's computer would automatically take a picture of the child. It would take a screenshot, and it would send that information to school administrators, who would then presumably investigate those children. I mean, we're talking about children here for potential links to extremism. This is the guy whose organization, according to Tommy Robinson, paid Tommy Robinson, the ex-leader of the sort of racist, rabble-rousing English Defense League.
There's a guy
paid him
who's...
eight.
Yeah, go ahead. We'll come back to Tommy because he's a mess all himself.
Paid him £8,000, so upwards of $10,000 to leave the group so that Quilliam could then claim victory as having orchestrated that defection. And Tommy Robinson says in his book and said in the quote that is in this piece that in exchange for that money, Tommy would essentially be Majid's poster boy, as it were. I mean, so these are the reasons why I think so many people in the Muslim community have sort of this distrust, this lack of trust in Majid. And you know, one of the things that I think is unfortunate is that non-Muslims who you know, throw their adulation at him, who just love him and praise him, don't see these things as particularly problematic. I'm hopeful that in light of this piece that I wrote, more people will.
It's an excellent piece. It really is. Well written, well researched. You can tell it, the numbers behind it, and just, you know, you call it out, you lay it out, you put it in there. You, as you said, you go back, you look at family members, you look at past associates, and it all comes out and you see this pattern of a person who is clearly this opportunistic individual, who is not everything he claims to be. Very well done.
Right.
And you know, in going on that, what do you see as his future path? Do you see him as becoming essentially one of these Fox News talking heads? Do you see him, you know, being off in the conservative circles? Because that seems to be who's courting him.
I don't know that he's going to veer off in the conservative circle, partly because I think so much of his base consists of what I've described as muscular liberals, liberals who are maybe progressive when it comes to social issues, but when it comes to issues related to national security and these kinds of things, are hawkish. They're willing to flex their muscles, willing to go to war quickly. And, you know, so he has a lot of support among that group. I mean, we're talking about people here like, you know, the Madeleine Albrights and Hillary Clintons of the world, people like them. People like Bill Maher, you know, who is a socially liberal guy, but when it comes to his views on Islam and views on foreign policy is really kind of hard line. What I think will happen with Majid is, and I should say he has a column now at the Daily Beast. He's a regular commentator on television. I think that it is likely that he would end up with some kind of regular television gig, which would grow his audience exponentially. But this is really what Majid is all about. It's about self-promotion. It's about promoting his own ideas. Really, I think more so than it is promoting the cause that he stands for.
I think you're exactly right. It's going to be interesting to watch where he goes from here and how he goes in there. Now, I would be amiss if I didn't have you on the air and start talking to you about Donald Trump. I just and what you think is going on the Republican side of things. Where do you think this cat is going? Because I think he made his mistake here.
I think he made his mistake here too.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like Megyn Kelly's political views. I don't like Fox News at all, really. But the idea that people should take offense because she was tough on him in terms of her questioning is really bizarre. I think that Megyn Kelly was in the right to actually lay out what she did for Donald Trump and say, listen, you've said really disparaging things about women. You've joked about their menstrual cycles. You've said disparaging things about the way that people like Carly Fiorina look. You've made jokes that are degrading and dehumanizing to women. How is it that we can expect to take you seriously? Why should we take you seriously as someone that wants to be presumably the leader of this great nation when you say things like this? And you know, fearing that would be the kind of line of questioning that would face him in the debate, he, of course, ran like a scaredy cat and pulled out and claimed that he didn't want to be attacked by Megyn Kelly. But I think what that episode revealed, Bentley, is that people are beginning to kind of understand that Donald Trump is not a serious candidate. He's not someone that can be trusted with the office of the presidency. And it's not only about his views when it comes to women. It's just about the sort of juvenile nature of his campaign overall. I mean, whether it's women, whether it's Muslims, whether it's Mexicans, whether it's his colleagues in the Republican Party, whom he jabs like a 14-year-old high school jock with these, you know, these sort of snarky remarks. I think more and more people are beginning to see that this is a guy that doesn't want to play by the rules. He's a guy who's always been in control of everything his whole life. At the top of corporations, he's never been the one that's had to answer to anybody. And suddenly now, when the heat gets turned up and he's got to answer to the media, he doesn't like it and he runs away and he hides.
And a strong woman. I mean, the fact that he chose to pick this battle with Megyn Kelly, who is a strong, yeah, intelligent person. Like you said, we may not align with her politically, but you have to respect her for what she does. She's an incredibly intelligent person. It was a well-drafted question, and it was a fair. It was tough. I'll give you that. It was a tough question, but it was a fair question, especially from a journalistic point of view. For him to make this big thing and then finally say that she had blood coming out of her eyes and other places and then make this stand where that he's not going to go, this is a opportunity for everybody that's left on that stage to stand up. He sucks the air out of the room. And with him not there, we're going to be able to see the rest of these guys, and hopefully they're going to be able to capitalize on just everything that you pointed out, that he's this 14-year-old adolescent with thin skin. He's narcissistic. And honestly, I think the guy that's going to come out of this the highest is Rand Paul.
Yep.
Rand Paul has been absolutely outspoken in the way that he's gone after Trump. In calling him everything that I just did, thin skin, narcissistic, you know, megalomaniac, everything. And, mm-hmm, you know, just saying it that cleanly, I think he's got a great chance for because he performs well in these. And the people of Iowa, I love them. I have a lot of family in Iowa and they don't like this. It's going to be interesting to see how they respond, but if they respond like I think Iowans will, they're not going to take too kindly to this guy taking his ball and going home.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head. And what I hope will happen is that the debate results in sort of a tag team against Trump, because quite frankly, I think that is what is necessary. You know, the Republican Party has been or its candidates, I should say, have been pretty good about calling Trump out individually.
Mm-hmm.
They don't express any sort of hesitation about going on television or radio or even in writing, saying what a nut they think he is and how outrageous his statements are. That is helpful, but I think more helpful than that will be when we start to see the Republican candidates other than Trump come together in unison and say, you know what, we're not going to put up with this. And we might have disagreements amongst us. We might certainly have disagreements with Trump. But you know what, now that he's not here, now that he's backed out, let's use this as an opportunity to really probe some of the policy positions that he's put forth and show how stupid they are. But not only that, look more at some of the outrageous things he says and raise questions about whether or not this guy is a guy that deserves to be the president of the United States. I think that's really the only way that the Republican Party is going to be able to move forward, is when they can, you know, make a determination collectively to just kind of cut him off and say to the American public, we're not going to put up with this anymore, and not allow him really to suck up all the oxygen in the room, which is what he's so good at doing.
He's great at it. On the line with us, Nathan Lean, author of The Islamophobia Industry, How the Right Manufactures Fear of Muslims. He's going to be here in the Chicagoland area next Tuesday, February 2nd. He will be over at the Paul Art Museum on Fullerton Avenue from 6 to 8 p.m., giving his speak on Islam, Islamophobia, and the soft prejudice of liberalism. Nathan, thanks, and I look forward to seeing you next week.
Great. Thank you. Looking forward to seeing you.
All right, brother. We'll talk to you then. That was Nathan Lean. He's always so fair and giving us time. He got snowed in into Washington DC, couldn't make it out here this week. So he's coming out next week and we're going to get out there and support him. And, the after party, by the way, which to which the cast is going to be invited, is going to be at a place called Lincoln Square, which is just across the way. It's a little restaurant there. They are known for the best baked potato in the Chicagoland area. And I'm telling you folks, if you can see my hands and how far they're put apart right now, the baked potato is like this big. It's a 3 mile island potato from I don't know where it's grown. It is huge, but they take that and they stuff it with whatever you want. Anyway, we'll look forward to having him. When we come back, we're going to be talking with, again, Lisa Kozlowski and also Yasmina with My Jihad. And we'll come back right after these messages.
عم تسمعي هلا فويس من شيكاغو. Ashana Banquet, well known for their beautiful rooms, superior service, and great food. For all your special occasions, call Ashana Banquet. We will take care of your wedding, engagement, henna parties, bridal shower, baby shower, or corporate events. Reserve today at 630-964-7090. 630-964-7090. Ashana Banquets has easy parking and seats up to 900 guests comfortably.
اتصل على Ashana Banquets واحجز لجميع مناسباتك. 1620 75th Street in Downers Grove, Illinois.
بشرى سارة إلى أبناء الجارية العربية. شركة FM Dash و Dash Network لدي هذا العرض المغري الآن فقط 40 قناة عربية و 190 قناة أمريكية ولمدة سنة كاملة ب $55 فقط للتركيب مجانا والأجهزة مجانا. اتصل الآن على 708-665-5123. العرض لمدة محدودة. اشترك بالقنوات العربية ب $55 واحصل على القنوات الأمريكية مجانا. للاشتراك او الاستفسار اتصل على FM Dash الان 708-665-5123. الرقم كمان مرة 708-665-5123.
Home Life Furniture, اخر صيحات الاثاث وكل ما تحتاج من مفروشات. Home Life Furniture, الامانة الاخوة والدقة في المواعيد.
No credit needed to finance. Everyone is approved at Home Life Furniture, 13449 South Cicero Avenue in Crestwood, Illinois, 708-631-3627. Mention Ya Hella Voice and your delivery is free. Get $200 off when you spend $1,500.
Risha Printing is the best spot for all your printing needs. We specialize in graphic design, banners, channel letters, lighted box signs. Everything from business cards and wedding invitations to t-shirts and car wraps can all be found at Risha. We would like to announce our collaboration with Pristine Line Media Productions, who will provide audio and video services for all occasions, such as weddings, special events, and commercials. Visit our showroom in Bridgeview. Call us at 708-233-6688 to place an order or speak with a Pristine Line representative to learn more about our wedding video packages. For more information, visit trishaprinting.com and pristineline.com.
I will earn my degree.
I will persevere.
I will be unstoppable.
What will you do? Come to Moraine Valley Community College and we'll help you fill in the blank. Moraine Valley is located in Palos Hills, Illinois. Get hands-on training to prepare for today's hottest jobs or earn the first 2 years of your bachelor's degree. Convenient class times and affordable tuition let you reach your personal and professional goals on your schedule and within your budget. Register now at morainevalley.edu and so you can say,
I will achieve my goals.
I will achieve my goals.
I will achieve my goals.
حلويات نابلس
جميع أنواع الحلويات العربية، كنافة، حلاوة جبن، مقلوءة، ليالي لبنان، عش سرايا، حلبة، عوامة، غريبة، هريسة، بقلاوة. حكيت كنافة؟ طبعا كنافة. ومش بس هيك، لا، في حلويات نابلس منجيب الجبن النابلسية من البلاد كل 45 يوم، وعجينة الكنافة بنعملها هون، مش بس بنشتريها جاهزة زي المحلات التانية. حلويات نابلس بإدارة أبو رامي والطبخ الشيف السوري محمد زياد على استعداد إنهم يعملوا الكنافة قدامك في بيتك أو في أي مكان بتختاره لمناسباتك السعيدة. حلويات نابلس، هارلم and 83rd في بريدج فيو.
Order online today at nablessweet.com for second day delivery. We have sugar-free sweets.
حلويات نابلس، تعالوا ذوق طعم البلاد.
Have you been injured in an auto or work-related injury? Have you been diagnosed with a disc herniation or whiplash? Give Dr. Abu Shanab a call at 708-599-9250. Dr. Abu Shanab is the expert you need to care for your injuries in his two locations, Bridgeview and Romeoville, 708-599-9250. Introducing Dr. Abu Shanab, a well-known chiropractor who specializes in both auto and work injuries. Call us at 708-599-9250. Call today and say Yahala sent you. 708-599-9250.
مرحبا، أنا ولاء عباد بقدم لكم برنامج الصبح صباحه من الاثنين للخميس. بنسمعكم أحلى الكلام، بنرجعكم لأيام البلاد الحلوة لما كانت كل العائلة ملتمة تفطر مع بعض، لما إمنا كانت تحط القهوة والشاي على النار، لما كنا نغمس الزيت والزعتر، ولما كان أبونا يعطينا المصروف إذا كان معه. برنامج صباحه عربي 100%. إذا اشتقت للمة العيلة اسمعنا في برنامج صباحه من الاثنين للخميس على راديو ياهلا فويس الساعة 9:30 بتوقيت شيكاغو.
وحشاني الدنيا في بلدي، عايز أروح أروح بلدي وافتكر اللي كان. وحشاني اللمة الحلوة واللي اللمة بيعزف غنوة في ليلة حبي كمان.
You're listening to Yahala Voice. Yahala Voice.
And welcome back to Bob and Friends, where this big old Islamophobe has his weekly therapy. And you know what? Thankful for it. I have many wonderful friends who come in and join us. And now sitting in with me is Lisa, and help me in with the correct pronunciation of the last name. Lisa's easy for me. It's Kosowski?
Kosowski.
Kosowski.
Yes.
Where's the F?
The W is pronounced like an F.
Just when, oh, Colin's not in his head. Like, oh yeah, you knew that. It's German? In
yeah.
Germany?
It's Lithuanian, Eastern European, yeah.
But
Russia, Lithuania, Poland.
Poland. Yeah. The skis I always associated automatically with Polish.
Poland and Russia, yeah.
And so, oh, okay, well, you know what? showing my waspness, am I not? In my lack of understanding of where that comes from. But anyway, Lisa, you're associated with the Jewish Voices for Peace.
Yes.
And we are going to be sitting on a panel together on Saturday night.
Yes.
Of which I am going to be, I'm the recovering Islamophobe. I guess I'm the token out there.
I guess so.
because it's just been something that I've really started to turn. I mean, I used to be a big Rush Limbaugh fan. I mean, I am coming from so far the other extreme. It's not even funny. I have Rush Limbaugh ties that I wear to events.
Oh my goodness.
And okay. I had my picture taken with Jesse Jackson. I've had my picture taken with Ahmed Rehab and with Rush Limbaugh ties on. So it's kind of like my fun thing to do. But anyway, so I'm recovering and so many people here like Khaled and also Mina, are you on the line with us?
I am. Hi, Dee. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? And Mina.
I'm great. Thanks.
Has been one of the wonderful people who has taken me in and who has taken pity on me in my recovery process. She's been one of my therapists.
Yes.
And she.
I think it's the opposite.
Not at all. And she graciously.
You've taken me in.
she graciously, her and her family during Ramadan have invited me into their mosque.
and into the place of worship, and we've gone to iftars and brought me into the iftars and explained things to me and answered my questions and gone to events with me and just been at my side and been so supportive. We've got a wonderful picture of us biking the drive with a My Jihad campaign.
Yeah.
Mina and I together. And so a lot of these wonderful things where we can show that two communities can bridge together. And, okay. and she herself is a human bridge because her husband is Christian and she being a Muslim and the children are Muslim and just wonderful kids. But she's just been working this. And so she's going to be, you're on the panel as well on Saturday night, correct?
Yes. And I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to meeting you, Lisa, and to, addressing this topic together. It's great. I'm really honored to have been asked.
You two are going to be very, very similar because she already has like pages here with highlighted, you know, she's got it all printed out of all the things that she's going to be going through. What do I have? Notepads that I just wrote within the last 15 minutes, you know, and little notes that I wrote out here. So, you know what? Like I said, this is definitely one of the cases where I'm going to be the student, you know, I'm going to be on the panel, but I'm there to learn. I'm so intrigued by this. And I'm so grateful for this opportunity to be out there and speaking. So when you're presenting, I mean, the things that we're going to be addressing are the effects of Islamophobia on society.
Yes.
What do you see?
Yes.
As Mina, we'll start with you. What do you see as an effect in your daily life of Islamophobia?
Well, it's something, you know, as a blogger of Islamophobia that I'm on the pulse of every day. It's just something that I'm passionate about as far as following what is happening around us, particularly in our own country. I don't feel it as much being, you know, kind of not visibly Muslim when I walk down the street, to be perfectly honest. So I'm of European descent and I don't wear hijab, so I don't stick out. If I go on the Metro train or if I'm walking through town, you know, someone is not going to say, oh, that's a Muslim person. But I have family members that are visibly Muslim that, you know, wear hijab or you know, have that appearance about them, and they are affected. They are affected, especially with the latest uprising of Islamophobia with the political elections, with the right-wing hate speech and things that are going on there. I'm seeing specific incidences with my own friends of friends, family that are telling me when they're going out and about, you know, they're being harassed and things like this. And this is scary. We're talking now hate crimes. When you approach a person, you know, on the street and verbally harass them and terrorize them and scare them because of, you know, their perceived religious affiliation, that's pretty scary stuff. And it's reminiscent of like 1960s, not 2016. So we are in a scary time right now, and we do have to be talking about this.
Absolutely.
All of us, because it does affect all of us.
Absolutely. And Lisa, what do you see in your daily life as an effect or something that's happening from Islamophobia? What do you see?
Well, obviously I'm not Arab or Muslim, so it doesn't affect me individually, personally, but I have a lot of Arab and Muslim friends. I'm afraid for them. And I see a lot of things that are very frightening in our society whenever any particular group is othered in the way that and demonized and scapegoated the way the Arab and Muslim community has been is very frightening. Particularly, I'm the daughter of a Holocaust survivor. So for me, the immediate connection for me from my worldview is thinking of the 1920s and 30s in Germany when Jews were scapegoated, portrayed in by the government and the media and in schools as being a danger to society and being less than human and being targeted in that manner. Yep. For me, that's where I see the immediate analogy for me. It's very frightening.
And to that end, yes. You often see people within the Jewish community for the exact reasons that you just mentioned, because it is so close to home, because you are only a generation away from the ultimate in outcasting and being made the stand that was taken not too long ago at that Donald Trump rally, where just quietly the woman stood up with a little Muslim. She had the little star on that with Muslim. And at her side was another gentleman who stood up, and he was a Jewish gentleman, and he stood up with the I am Muslim on there. And they just stood there to make that silent protest that went around the world. I mean, it went all the way around the world, and everybody saw that. But it was that it's the people within that community that make the stand that I think, and your presence here today and your presence on Saturday, that makes just a huge statement of we're in this together. You know, where it's not,
definitely.
It's not Muslim against Jew. Yeah. It's not Muslim against Christian, against Jewish, against, it's not that. It's the human side that we can't allow one group to be outcast like this. And there's a danger of vilifying one group like we're seeing happen in today's political environment, which is an absolute, absolute shame. And the way that the Republican candidates are using this as a political tool to use fear to control people. And I used to be one of those guys.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be remorse for the repercussions of that. When you put hate speech out there, there are repercussions in the community. It's not repercussions against them. It's repercussions against the communities that they are vilifying. And they don't seem to need to take responsibility for that. And the same thing just to, you know, I loved what Lisa said about, you know, the othering of a group. If you normalize the othering of any group in the United States, now you've put everyone at risk of becoming an other. So today it's Muslims, you know, yesterday it was Jews, and even today, you know, we see anti-Semitism, you know, but you know, you're basically allowing that in this country, and one day, you know, you might be in the group that's being othered. So it does put us in a dangerous situation as a whole, as a country.
The infamous poem.
We don't all stand against it.
Yep, the infamous poem where first they came for the socialists and so on down the line, and then finally there was no one to stand for me. And that's where we've all got to be in this together and do that. Speaking of which, healthy responses. Healthy responses that don't create additional division, because I've spent a lot of time beating my head against the wall, being angry in the responses, getting back against people, and you get unfriended and you get everything else. But what I'm looking for is healthy responses. You know, what are, and Mina, you're in the middle of this. You blog about it all the time, and blogging is a positive response. But what do you feel is a healthy response to the,
Yeah, and I do think everyone should participate in whatever way that they can. You know, a woman who wears hijab, that is her form of activism, even though she's choosing that for herself, for her own spirituality. When she steps outside, that is a form of activism. So, it could just mean correcting a coworker in the lunchroom who said something wrong that they heard on Fox News or something like that. But, you know, with my blogging, that's my little, flip on the radar that I'm trying to provide, you know, towards the fight with this, is just if I see something on the news, I will perhaps blog the other side of it. So you can hear all kinds of things about Muslims if you turn on MSNBC, CNN, Fox, any of these news stations, or go online, but you don't always hear Muslim writers, speakers, you know, out there having their own shows or, you know, these opportunities to say our part. So that's what I try to do from the blogging perspective. And it's just educating. And especially, like, I love this panel that it's, I mean, you know, I think everyone should come from any group, but I love this panel that, you know, we're representing the Abrahamic faiths. And, in some of the, you know, speech, they want to, you know, try to say, oh, Christians against Muslims, Muslims against Jews, and all this kind of thing. But the reality is we are all monotheist. We come, you know, from Abraham. We all are descended from Abraham, and Muslims believe in the books of Moses and Jesus and all the prophets that came before, peace be upon them all. So sometimes when you just educate someone on, you know, just some of this, you know, just some of the regular history that binds us all, that's enough, you know, just to kind of deter the conversation back to a normal state.
Absolutely, absolutely. And now, Lisa, what, as from your side, what do you see as healthy responses coming back to against Islamophobia?
Well, like Nina said, I mean, when you're dealing one-on-one, let's say in a work
Come right into the mic.
Oh, come on. Sorry like about this? That. Is
yes.
that good?
Okay. Much better. Yes, thank you.
So when you're one-on-one with friends, coworkers, in a situation like that, yes, you can address it right on the spot. When someone makes a comment that's based in ignorance or fear or just based on what they're hearing on television and from our politicians, which is where a lot of this Islamophobia is being fueled. It's not just Trump, but that's another... That's another
That's threat. A whole category.
That's a whole category of its own. Yes, healthy responses, you take them one-on-one and you explain, you know, that what you just said is racist and here's why. And explaining it in a compassionate way. I believe in the healthy response. I also believe in appropriate responses. And sometimes the appropriate response is an angry response. It depends on the situation. So I'm privileged because I'm, you know, a white person, right? And I'm not Arab or Muslim. So I have a little bit more leeway. So for example, there was some people I met on Facebook and they wanted to do coffee with Muslims. So they wanted to do like a social media kind of little display of different people of different faiths all having coffee together and then walking over to Trump Tower and taking a picture in front of Trump Tower with a big sign that said, "We are all Muslim."
Okay.
And that was very lovely.
Sure.
Except I wanted to flip off the Trump Tower.
You're a little bit of radical side. Wait till you meet her. You'll never see that coming. Trust me. You will never see that coming.
I was downtown on New Year's Day with my daughter and her friend, and we were shopping at the Black Hawk store and at the water tower and all this and walking up and down. And I, you know, I saw that Trump Tower and I've been vocal about that I'm not happy that name is up in our city. I don't know what Trump has contributed to, you know, causes in our city besides Islamophobia. But we were about to take a photo, and of course, the Trump Tower was about to be in the back, and I was like, girls, get out of the way. I am not taking your photo with Trump Tower in the back. Let's find a different backdrop.
You know what?
It ended up being a Christmas tree. That was the backdrop of my photo.
I seem to recall that. I think you alluded to that exact fact. Okay, did you take a picture of you flipping it off, or
well,
no?
Well, here's the thing. So my Muslim hosts, who were very lovely, and they were said, we want to keep this very civil and very friendly. And I said, I understand. I totally respect that. So we took our picture. And then afterwards, I took one of my Jewish friends, Leo from JVP Chicago, and I said, let's take our own picture. And we took separate one, the two of us flipping off Trump Tower. I posted it completely separate from the group on my Facebook page.
Love that.
It was amazing how far that photo went.
Really?
Oh yeah, the shares and yeah, the number of likes I got and the whole thing.
Viral.
And it still keeps coming back. Like I'll see it posted somewhere.
Oh,
and
that's perfect.
Yeah.
My cousin did that. My cousin's kid.
I get it.
Yeah, you know what? It is. There is a little cathartic response to that, you know, to be able to just, if not just the last act of defiance against that guy.
And that's the defiance from me as a white person. My Muslim friends don't have that privilege because they're countering a stereotype of the angry,
right?
You know, radical Islamic terrorist, you know, and so they're trying to counter that and they don't have that luxury to be able to express that kind of anger. I do.
You're right. You're exactly right. And that's why it's so powerful to see so many people, you know, coming back up and taking a stand against that and making a loud stance against that. And I think that's what we have to do. And another one of those, a good example of this is Dr. Hawkins from Wheaton. And when she decided that what she was going to do was wear the hijab.
Yeah.
And then that whole hubbubaloo that created in stepping into that mess. That she went on there but it was such a neat thing to do. Dr. Hawkins was so brave. That is the kind of cool response. That's the kind of cool, non-violent response that you see out there. The two Muslims, or the Muslim woman and the Jewish man that stood up at the Trump rally. The Sikh man who was just recently at another Trump rally. These are the things, or these are the kind of people that are out there that can make that positive difference that I think if enough people see, they're going to start waking up to it. And I like the idea of getting together, showing pictures, doing things together with Muslims. And that's so key. So your plans are being down there on Saturday, right? It's Saturday. It's at the Alnada Center in Worth, and it starts at 7 p.m. Do I have that all correct?
I believe so.
Okay. Now here,
time, but
here,
I'm pretty sure that's when we'll be there.
Here comes my next question. I'm looking right over at Colin when I say this. When they start these events, is this event Arab Standard Time? Or is this going to be, I mean, like, you know, as a WASP going.
If that's the case, I'll see you at midnight.
You know what? Yeah. I'm looking, and at least the reason why I say this is that I have gone to Arab events at the start time in the hall that it's supposed to be in. And I could probably, I could count on one hand the number of people that are there.
Are we allowed to make these Arab jokes? We have enough Arab friends that we're allowed to make these Arab jokes.
wait a second. It's not even an Arab joke. It's an Arab reality. I mean, and I'm still working on an algorithm to figure out the amount of time that you have to add to the clock that's on there, and it has something to do with the number of Arab.
Have it just figured out. They show up.
It has to do something to do with an exponential factor of the number of Muslim brides present. Now, I'm still working on that algorithm, but it's logarithmic, or it's something to do with that. But,
you know, keep snacks in your purse, in your car, things like that if you're invited to a wedding or something, because you don't know when dinner will be served. So at least you could, you know, run out to the parking lot, nosh on a granola bar.
You know what? You're
I'm so going to get grief for
that. Oh, well, I'm getting grief already, and it's just one of the things. These are one of the things that I've come to understand and accept and actually love about the communities.
Yeah.
That, you know what? There's certain things that make us all unique and different. We WASPs, Lord knows, we have our things. You know what?
Some people are just not slaves to the clocks.
Yep, exactly. And so, but you know what? The more we can get together, the more we can laugh together, the more we can do things together, and the more we can do it so that other people can see, whether it's just on Facebook, you know, whether it's liking a friend's, you know, page on Facebook or sharing something from somebody else's page, somebody that might be flipping off Trump Tower, which will be on my Facebook page very soon.
putting the human touch on all that.
Yeah. Yeah. It brings it back and it makes us realize that we're all in this together. And that we go back, and if we just pay attention to the golden rule that we're supposed to go out there and love one another and just enjoy each other's presence and do these things and share with one another, it's pretty easy. You know, it really is. You don't have to be that angry. You don't have to be that afraid. And
it takes a lot more energy to be angry and fearful than to just chill out and try to get along. That's my philosophy anyway.
It absolutely does. And people just, you know, they want to go to that side, and infuriates me now in the political season because it's easy to divide. Fear is a great divider. And the more, I mean, we've known that since the Great Red Scare, since, you know,
yeah.
And the more we see that, I mean, everybody's kind of had their turn. You know, the Jewish community was ostracized for long periods of time. The Catholic community was ostracized. And the Muslim community, the black.
And people of color have always been in this country.
Black Lives Matter.
The Japanese were put in internment camps during World War II. It happens over and over again. We don't learn from history. And the thing we can learn, us, the everyday people, is to speak up, because silence is complicity.
That's it.
If you stay silent, you're supporting the forces of evil, because they gain strength from your silence.
And for me,
totally true.
Yep. For me, it's been difficult because, you know, I have people I've lost several friends. Went at it very brash and jumping in front, and some were evangelical and very evangelical side. And so I lost a lot of friends going that way. But one thing I'm very happy to see is, you know, we saw Wheaton College make that evangelical stand or whatever, kind of against the Muslim community. And we're seeing now Willow Creek tonight, how to get along with, how to approach your Muslim neighbor. And Willow Creek is a huge evangelical. And I'm really excited about going out there. Lynn Heibel. I don't know if you know anything about Lynn Heibel. Bill Heibel is the founder of Willow Creek, and she is the co-founder. She is the wife.
Mm-hmm.
She is one of the strongest advocates for the Palestinian people I have on the evangelical side that I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
She's gone over to Palestine and spoken at some of the events over there. It is very powerful to see. and in the way that she's raising her voice, but she's walking on eggshells over there. And
to say the least.
And she has to be very careful at how she rolls this out and how she brings it out. And she is, if I can say this on my side, she's going through that same discovery process that I did. That in order to address the Palestinian cause, you have to address the Islamophobia side. Because just like the politicians are using the Islamophobia, the anti-Palestine people are also using.
Exactly. Well, they're all tied in together.
They're all tied in together. Exactly. There are many elements within that. But your Gellers and your Spencers and Gaffneys and going on in there are using it with a particular purpose of achieving that end goal. You know, using that fear mongering, as a way of achieving the end goal. And so you've got to address the whole basket of issues. You've got to address the Islamophobia in order to be able to talk about the Palestinian issue. And so that's part of where I've come to it as well, or come to my understanding. And Mina, I know you're a strong advocate for the people of Palestine. We've only got about a minute here. Mina, do you have anything you want to share in the last minute? How your blog site? How do we find you on the blog?
I blog at, what's that?
Go ahead. You blog at?
I blog at yasminareality.com. Not Yasmina Realty, but Yasmina Reality. And, cause that's typically because I'm responding to things in the media that are falsehoods or, misrepresentations of Islam or people of my faith. So that's kind of how I picked up, Yasmina Reality. And, I blog a lot on Huffington Post and a few other places too. So come on out there and, I started to do some podcasts too, just trying to, break things up a little bit, but I'm just trying to, share other sides of the story and real Muslim voices.
Awesome. And Lisa, your organization and group?
Is Jewish Voice for Peace. You can go online to jewishvoicesforpeace.org and click on the Network Against Islamophobia. There's a statement you can sign on to opposing Islamophobia. And also there's different things that you can do in your community. There's things you can download, a t-shirt you can order, things like that. So
very neat and very well organized community. You can come here, all of us, on Saturday night.
Jewish Voice for Peace.
Oh, isn't it like I get the chills, you know, every time I do it, because
it's such
a positive thing. And Mina, looking forward to seeing you on Saturday. Lisa, looking forward to seeing you on Saturday.
Likewise.
Again, we'll be over at the El Nada Theater over in Worth, and you can come see us at 7 p.m. and we look forward to seeing you all then. I can't thank you enough for being here, taking the time to come in.
Thank you.
Mina, thanks for calling in. I want to thank Nathan Lean. I want to thank Khaled. I want to thank the people at Yahala Voice. And the rebroadcast of this show will be tomorrow at 11 a.m. God bless everyone, and we'll see you all next week.
يا هلا فويس الصوت العربي في أمريكا.